And welcome back to Talk Is Best. I am joined this week by Alec Pangea, good friend of mine, and we will be talking about Sanguinary Song, my debut novel, coming out in April or May at this point. We already know about the craziness going on around the world. Alec and I touch base on that a little bit in this podcast, but mostly we talk about Sanguinary Song and the breaking news concerning Sanguinary Song. And we also talk about anime, so sit back, relax, this episode of Talk Is Best starts now. What's going on, guys? This is Andrew Bass, and you're listening to Talk Is Best. And welcome back to Talk Is Bass, and joined as always by Alec.
Hello.
Hi. How you been?
I've been good. How you been, my friend?
Oh, hanging in there, and, you know, sort of making the best of the situation. Coming up with some positive things to do this weekend. You know, it's funny. It's very interesting working from home and sort of doing the online aspect with my students, and it's like I got my Chromebook and I'm there to answer questions, and you know, of course I'm doing extra stuff behind the scenes, but at the same time it's like, on, you know, in the background I got anime playing, and I pretty much got through the whole Dragon Ball series.
That's awesome.
It's been really cool to sort of, you know, it's cool, but at the same time it's very interesting that, you know, I'm working from home, and, you know, it's like I'm pretty much watching anime and working at the same time, which is pretty cool.
It's the dream. It's what, you know, we wish they'd let us do out in public, right?
Yeah, right. but, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on, and, you know, especially, you know, now it's a really good time to really think about all the things that we could do to sort of interact with each other, even though we're sort of in the social isolation. You know, there's a lot of things that we could do on social media. I actually heard online that they came out with a new Netflix watch party, which is kind of cool.
That is cool. Yep.
And I've seen, like, on my office pages, like I joined like an office group where it's you know, talking about the TV show The Office. And they've been having watch parties over the past few days. And I thought it was really cool. We're at all these, like, you got like thousands of people coming in and watching The Office together and commenting as they're watching the show.
Well, I think it's a very fortunate thing that our generation, you know, we've said this as a running joke in so many situations over the past several years. But our generation is the social media generation, you know, where everybody's online and everybody's hooked in and plugged into each other and everybody has a voice. You know, I mean, we've been saying it over and over again for the past several years, but now it's actually really becoming a blessing, because people who are at home in isolation can still have their community and fellowship through the online platforms and things like watch parties and, you know, Instagram lives and podcasts like Talk Is Bass and things of that nature. So I think that really is a very fortunate thing in this, you know, very sudden and shocking situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm doing and you're doing and One True Promotion is doing, you know, that the viewers can really have the opportunity to tag along with now, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got four shows here at One True Promotion, and all four of them mingle with each other. The same, you know, you get the same opportunities on all four.
Yeah. Why don't we go through the shows real quick, Alex? It's, you know, you got the bulk of it.
Yeah. On Tuesday nights, One True Promotion begins with Tip, Title in Progress. And on Tip, I basically go live on Instagram and I research facts about business, self-publishing, query lettering, hashtagging, world building. I saw a great article about world building today. I was thinking that that might be a good subject for the next couple tips. But Tip is every Tuesday night at 8. It's an Instagram live where I go live revealing this information and invite you to join in the discussion. You can comment in the comment section, leave written comments, ask questions, provide answers to the questions we're asking about the business of publishing. Or if you would rather talk about it, you want to talk for a couple minutes, you could request to go live with me and I'll bring you on right then and there, and we could have a quick live discussion about the topic right there in front of the audience. It's basically an open chat forum on the business of publishing, and that's every Tuesday at 8 on Instagram Live. Right after that, I do live readings. Oh, and I forgot to mention that on tip, while you're answering these questions and while you're participating in the discussion, you might be somebody who has such knowledge because you're publishing a book or because you're running an independent business. So coming on live with me or appearing in the comment section is your opportunity right there to plug and promote your business. Then at 9, after that, 9 to 10, I have live readings. We just call them live readings with One True Promotion, same place, Instagram Live. I read segments of my work. I read segments of Andrew's work. If you send me stuff, I read segments of your work, and your work can get free promotion. On Thursday nights, I do Drop a Line. That's my 45-minute interview show on Instagram Live, where you could be the guest for the entire segment and have 45 minutes to promote yourself. And then on Saturday mornings, Talk is Bass goes live. That is Andrew's magnificent podcast that we are on right now. This podcast is the real deal. If you come on here as Andrew and I are on now, you can have a couple hours all to yourself to talk about who you are, to be away from the, pressure of the live camera if you're a little bit camera shy, and have the blessing of recorded footage where any mistake or, misspoken word can be edited out and you can be, feel safe in Andrew's hands that he's going to turn out a great product that properly promotes your interview. And bada bing, bada boom, those are four different opportunities every single week where One True Promotion can promote you.
Oh, let's talk a little bit about live readings real
All right.
quick. This is a really exciting time for me. Sanguinary Song is all but finished at this
My
point.
man.
We are like 99% done.
We are. Yep.
The big thing that we will be announcing going forward, and it could be a really good thing to do with this whole social distancing thing, is on Alex's show on March 24th, for the first time ever, Sanguinary Song will be read live on air. A piece of Sanguinary Song will be read for all of you.
First look.
So this is the first look at Sanguinary Song before it is released to the general public, which will be very soon.
If you are a fan of Mr. Bast, you should show up for that live reading because you are going to get the first look at Mr. Bast's book. Sorry, Lord Bast. You're actually Lord Bast now.
Yes, interesting story. I am a
You should
lord
tell
of
everybody.
Scotland. Yeah, so quick divergent story before we get back to the good news here. I actually have a plot of land in Scotland, and the official rules are if you have a plot of land, no matter how big or small, you retain the title of lord. So I am now officially Lord Andrew Bast of Scotland. And it's like a pretty awesome feeling, especially right now. It's just like, hey, I got an email from a place, and it actually has my title on it, which was really cool. But it's one of those small things. I've always been interested in ancient history. I've always been interested in those titles and stuff like that. And Etheling is a really cool title for me, and usually that means prince in Anglo-Saxon. So just to be able to kind of have a little bit of history with me, and have that title is really cool.
Have you read The Inheritance Cycle? Aragon,
I have, yeah.
Aragon, eldest, Brisinger, Inheritance. You read all those? There's a villain who appears at the end of the story, and he's basically a juiced up imperial soldier who takes on the entire rebel army with his bare hands, and he is named, I believe, Lord Barst. So every time I think Lord Bast, I picture you as like a juiced up Viking fantasy villain with magic powers.
That's funny.
So
It almost sounds like
I
an
might have a
anime.
different reaction to Lord Bast than other people do. I'm aware of that.
But yeah, you know, Sanguinary Song's looking good, and you know, I'm getting my first look at live readings on the 24th, and first time ever, it's going to be read so that people can listen to it, mm-hmm. and it's pretty awesome feeling, and you know, there's a lot left to sort of reveal. You know, I got the cover reveal coming soon. I have my end of year live video coming very shortly. We're pretty much in the last stretch now. That'll be on a Monday, which is really mm-hmm. cool. You guys aren't gonna want to miss my live stream, because that is where a lot of info is going to be dropped. You sort of get to celebrate with me, and you get to take a look through my year. And a lot of you have been there with me since the beginning of this challenge. And I think it'll be a really cool thing for everyone to sort of get together and sort of experience, you know, that walkthrough with me. And I've got a lot of cool, interesting things planned. A little bit of exposure into Sanguinary Song, maybe another live read. It all depends on how I'm feeling, you know. So if you want to catch up with all the current information with Sanguinary Song, that end of year live stream is going to be the place to be. And of course, I'll also be on Drop a Line coming up at the end of year challenge. It's going to be a little later than I expected because of leap year. I'm like, okay, well, it should have been a Wednesday, and then I would be on Drop Line on Thursday. Yep. But you know, it turns out that March 30th is looking like day 365 because of leap year, and I didn't think about that going into it, because I started the 365 day challenge on April 1st.
Yeah, right.
So yeah. It's a little bit of a change, right. From what I was
saying. Yep. Just a little bit. But that is awesome. I cannot wait to read your segment live. I cannot wait for your live stream or your release date. It's going to be awesome. We got a lot of great promotion for Andrew coming up on all shows on One True Promotion. And if you are a part of his excellent following, which I know you definitely are if you're listening, you're going to want to keep your eyes on at Alec Pangea Author on Instagram and at One True Promotion on Instagram, because that's where a lot of the action is going to be going down.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're running off at about 14 minutes now. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some exciting things. And then we'll close out the show. It's going to be a short show today. I know I'm going to be appearing on Drop a Line. It would have been this past Thursday by now. But, we got a lot of exciting things planned. And hopefully a lot of you have turned in for this Drop a Line segment. Very excited for the opportunity to jump back on another day before my release.
Buying a used car? Make sure previous owner isn't included. Transporter of Souls by Tammy Vreeland. Get it now at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Sometimes the dead don't rest.
For Christina Vega, life hasn't been normal. Her parents murdered, her life uprooted. A coven of witches have raised her ever since, raised her to hunt the nightmares. A fiendish plot has been hatched to resurrect the Sanguinary, the very same creature that has haunted her since childhood. An army of deadly creatures will stop at nothing to see the Sanguinary return to life. Time is running out, and if Christina cannot stop the resurrection, millions may suffer the same fate as her parents. One thing is for certain, some will not survive the final verse of the Sanguinary Song. Sanguinary Song is my debut novel that is coming out in 2020. Are you an author, poet, artist, or gamer? Do you have something to promote? Would you like to reach online viewers completely free of charge? Alec Pangea's Drop a Line is a live stream for you. Drop a Line streams through Instagram Live featuring Alec and you. Come on Drop a Line for a casual live chat where you could spend up to 45 minutes promoting your book, game, website, company, and more. Drop a Line has already featured guests phoning in from countries overseas, and viewership is growing day by day. Alec's dream is to network with as many talented artists as possible and see their shared following grow exponentially. Drop a Line is committed to that goal, and you could be his next guest. Drop a Line streams Thursdays at 9 p.m. on Instagram Live. To get in on Drop a Line, follow him at Alec Pangea Author on Instagram to schedule your spot. Drop a Line is a really awesome promotional tool. I've been on it several times. It's done wonders for my writing career. And I know it's actually helped a lot of people with their own projects. So if you're looking for some way to promote your business, Drop a Line is the place for you. And welcome back, guys. We've been talking a little bit about us and, you know, what's going on with the Sanguinary series. And I'm very happy that it's, you know, it's at the end of the road there. Like I said, it's 99% done. But, you know, we talked a little bit about things that I was doing while I was working. And, you know, how strange it was that I was able to watch anime, you know, while I'm pretty much, you know, focused on everything else. But it was really cool to sort of revisit some of the anime that I hadn't seen before. And like the anime I hadn't seen before was Dragon Ball. And of course, I've seen bits and parts of it, you know, but I was really mostly a Dragon Ball Z guy. And that's how I got into the series. And there's a lot of things that I knew happened in Dragon Ball. And there's a lot of things I haven't seen that happened in Dragon Ball. And,
sure.
You know, it's really cool because what I'm trying to do is sort of marathon my way through at this point. Uh-huh. Like I started with Dragon Ball. I'm going to Dragon Ball Z, and then I'm going to hopefully transition to Dragon Ball Super at some point.
What are you watching Dragon Ball on?
I'm watching on Anime Tube Unlimited. It's like an app that I downloaded on my Xbox.
Yeah. I always feel like even though I'm on the computer all the time, I need to join the next generation already. Because I'm like a creature of habit. I go to YouTube, I go to Netflix, I go to my three social media sites. Like, you know, it takes an extra push to get me onto a new website. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, even though I'm on the computer, I feel like an older dude who needs to, you know, get with the program already.
Well, let me tell you, if you're looking for a nice anime website, like I've tried Crunchyroll, I've tried other websites, but AnimeTube Unlimited so far has been the best. It was really easy to download on my Xbox. It saves everything that I want, like my favorites, and it saves your progress as you go as well. So it's like if I ended up on episode 86, when I log on the next day, it'll start at episode 89.
That's awesome.
Wherever I left off. So if I'm in the middle of 86, I'd start at 86, you know?
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. I loved Dragon Ball. Like you, you and I grew up the same time. I started with Dragon Ball Z in the 1990s, the late 1990s, and that was my absolute favorite show in the whole world. And then Dragon Ball came out years later and would air before reruns of Dragon Ball Z, or sometimes reruns, sometimes new episodes in like the Cell and Buu sagas. That I think was around the time that Dragon Ball started. I definitely don't recall ever seeing Dragon Ball around the time of the Namek saga, that we're talking like early 2000s. So yeah, but I remember Dragon Ball did eventually come on a nightly basis. And I actually did watch the whole thing from week to week back in the day. And of course, at the time, nothing matched the excitement of Dragon Ball Z. Nothing at all. I watched all kinds of other anime shows. I watched Yu Yu Hakusho, which I've just been rewatching now. at home the past couple of days, absolutely loving it. But back in the day when I was young, nothing measured up to Dragon Ball Z. But as an adult, there are some things about Dragon Ball that kind of almost resonate with me a little bit more the way my mind is now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's been a lot of things that I've been texting you and just like, there's things that I was shocked happened. And like, there's a lot of inconsistencies in Dragon Ball that I couldn't help but like laugh at.
Yeah, evil containment waves.
Oh my god, evil containment wave is the worst of them all.
Well, that's something when I was a kid, I was watching that. And like, you know, it's like a two-part arc, the Piccolo arc. And spoiler alert, you know, like throughout most of the first part with King Piccolo, the evil containment wave is scarcely used, is often referred to, and is, and you know, for the most part, until Tien does it, it backs up what it preaches. And then, of course, you know, there's the thing where Tien...
Just a little clarification. We're talking about the evil containment wave in Dragon Ball. And basically, what the evil containment wave is somebody does, like, a spell that essentially traps and locks away a person so that they can't get out. And the
in an electric jar,
Yeah, in a jar. So, like, the problem with the evil containment wave, which is kind of funny when I look at it now, because that's probably how they locked Majin Buu away. You know, I'm starting to kind of theorize. But
the evil
containment wave, essentially, the moot point behind it is Master Roshi is the one who introduces the evil containment wave, and he says, you know, I watched my master do it, and my master trapped Piccolo, and that's where he's been before he was released. And the problem with the evil containment wave is they set the stage automatically that if said person successfully uses the evil containment wave, or unsuccessfully for that matter, as Master Roshi would go on to learn later on, that the person who cast the spell it gives their life to do so. So Master Roshi's master
died
doing the evil containment wave. And then Master Roshi died trying to lock King Piccolo away. And then, you know, I'm over here like, wow, this thing's no joke. And then Tien spends like a good, I want to say 10 episodes trying to perfect this evil containment wave to use it on King Piccolo. And, you know, it's quite funny because I just am watching this and all of a sudden it clicks just out of the blue. I'm like, wait a minute. How many times has he attempted this darn spell?
Yeah.
He hasn't died.
Yeah. Yeah. And then to top it off, he does it, but he just passes out.
Yeah. He does it, but just passes out, which is hilarious.
Yeah, so he's too hardcore to die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In fact, I mean, and you know what? We can treat that as a plot hole, or we can look back at the very first arc of Dragon Ball Z that ever aired, which is a story arc ahead, you know, in terms of the timeline. We could talk about that a little bit later. But when Nappa, you know, knocks off Tien's left arm, his first response is, "Oh, you wait until it grows back." I'm like, "It grows back?"
I mean, Piccolo's arm.
No, Tien's arm. He says, "You just wait till it grows." No, in the original Funimation dub of English translated Dragon Ball Z in 1997, Nappa knocks off Tien's arm, and Tien says, "You just wait till it grows back." And as a kid, I'm like, "What? His arm grows back?"
I thought you meant Piccolo because Piccolo could regenerate. Tien.
No, Tien said it. I swear. I swear on my life that Tien says that in the original translation of Dragon Ball Z. And that's now we catch him surviving evil containment waves. So maybe Tien is just too bossed to die. Who knows?
I have no idea. He was supposed to die when he attacked Cell with all those tri beams. And it's like when I watched Dragon Ball and he used a tri beam, everyone's like, "No, Tien, don't do it. You're going to kill yourself," because the whole thing about the tri beam wave is that, you know, you exhaust all your energy and then you just can't live afterwards.
Yeah, there's like this elephant in the room from Tien's first appearance to his last in the Majin Buu saga. There's like this elephant in the room of people keep telling him he's going to die and he doesn't die.
Yeah.
It's like his superpower is he's Sean Bean in real life. Like they say that Sean Bean in real life doesn't actually die. There's this meme that could be total BS for all I know, but where Sean Bean dies in most epic movies he does, they, you know, there's this rumor that he gets into bar fights and survives stabbings and all that stuff. So maybe Tien is just Sean Bean. Who knows?
I don't know. But like, hey, fast forward.
Yeah.
Fast forward through this manga. I was already willing to accept the cheesiness for what it was. I'm like, all right, it's one little mistake. We'll move on.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, Kami uses it.
Yeah.
The evil containment wave on Piccolo Jr.
But wait, and there's more.
I'm flabbergasted at this point because not only does he use it on Piccolo
and not die,
but Piccolo somehow reverses it on Kami.
Yeah.
And nobody, none of the two die. And the funny thing is those two were connected. So if one of them gets killed off, the other one goes.
Yeah.
And both of them pretty much use the evil containment wave and nothing happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not the worst of it. That's not the worst of it. I think the worst of it was Goku and the Nimbus Cloud.
That was something I actually noticed as a kid too. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So essentially what happens, just a quick like recap of it. Goku's Nimbus Cloud gets destroyed like two or three times, almost as much as his tail gets cut off, right? And you know, each time Goku is so upset because he likes this Nimbus Cloud and it just gets destroyed. And the first time it's like a standard progression through a story, right? You're always using the Nimbus Cloud. It gets destroyed. It's like, holy crap, I can't use the Nimbus Cloud anymore. Mm-hmm. So it runs around everywhere and he never even tries to call the Nimbus Cloud because he thinks it's destroyed for good.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you know, after this big arc and he grows as a person, all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, by the way, your Nimbus Cloud doesn't perish. You can keep calling it back. Have you ever tried calling it? No, because I thought it was gone. Okay.
Yeah.
Calls a Nimbus Cloud. And then later on down the series, it gets destroyed again.
Yep.
And he turns around, he goes, I thought the Nimbus Cloud was destroyed. Andrew over here is like, wait a sec. Didn't we go through this like 20 or 30, maybe 40 episodes ago?
Yeah.
He goes, oh yeah, it's gone. I can't find it. And instead of like reinforcing what we said before, like how the Nimbus Cloud doesn't get destroyed, Corrin completely ignores that.
Yeah.
Right. And Corrin just turns around and goes, oh, that's just an older model.
An older model
here,
of a cloud.
Here, just jump in this big, giant cloud that I have over here, and you'll get a new one.
Yeah, there were thousands of Nimbus clouds.
Yeah.
And he picks one up. He says, I like this one.
I can't make this up. It's just funny. I mean, if you're looking for an anime to watch, I'm telling you, Dragon Ball will provide that humor for you. But like, with that aside, it does have a lot of good stories and good entertainment behind it.
Absolutely.
Which is, you know, you get the entertainment with the laughing and like the questioning, but they have really deep stories, and I'm starting to see that sort of translate as I'm going through the series as well.
What can you give us an example?
So, like everyone knows, the story with Piccolo, especially if you're like watching this and you're part of my anime club, which I think a good majority of them do. It's like Goku and Piccolo are like mortal enemies, right? And you know, all throughout Dragon Ball Z at the beginning, Piccolo begrudgingly decides to work with Goku to defeat a stronger enemy.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, we're only friends until this thing is over, and then you and I are going to fight, and I'm going to defeat you, and I'm going to take over the world. And the ironic part is that there's two more people that are more powerful than that said person, and he ends up taking care of Goku's kid. And it's like, you know, you know, when you look back into it as an anime viewer and like where that relationship goes, Piccolo ends up being more of a father than Goku ever was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And it's funny, I read somewhere once that Toriyama couldn't figure out what else he really wanted to do with Piccolo at that point, once he introduced Vegeta, who was then became Goku's new nemesis, you know, his new rival, amid some other very powerful villains. You know, Goku's power level keeps going up. The villains keep, you know, getting quantifiably stronger and more menacing. So one thing you run into a lot in Dragon Ball is that characters get left behind and forgotten. And my understanding is that, in a way, Piccolo was one of those characters, in the sense of there was nothing he could do to be a villain to Goku anymore. So even though Toriyama thought that it was cliche and he wasn't that interested in it, he just had did the whole, you know, Gohan makes him more empathetic, you know, kind of storyline. You know, his heart is opened up by his pupil, by this young person. And they just kind of, you know, humanize him steadily from that point. Now, of course, as a viewer and as a lifelong viewer and a huge fan who adores Piccolo, I like the turn that he makes. And I like seeing how wise he is that he's able to make such a change. And it's interesting when you look at his backstory and you see where he comes from, and you can see that some of that stuff in the beginning was you know, just kind of what blind rage. It was how he was born, what was expected of him. So I don't know. It's interesting, you know, but yeah, apparently Toriyama did that kind of on a whim.
Well, I think doing that really saved Piccolo's character. And yeah, that's the problem, though. Like, you mentioned how he was like, wow, I got this character that I really like, but there's really nothing for him anymore. Like, his motivations aren't going to matter in like a season or two. So I got to make a change, and I got to do it now.
Yep.
You know, it's, when you look at it, Piccolo wasn't exactly forgotten in the series. No. I mean, yeah, he wasn't the most powerful. Yeah, he wasn't the focus of things. But he was an equal part of at least the trilogy, oh, yeah, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Well, and even in the, and even in the Buu saga, which is, you know, where the crazy stuff starts, he maintained a spot-led role as a mentor, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the thing was, and, you know, most Dragon Ball Z fans know that, you know, Dragon Ball Z was supposed to end the Cell saga, right? And Piccolo was very instrumental in getting Gohan to that point, to where he was the hero, where he was going to save the day, you know? Piccolo was the whole motivation for Gohan to really go to Namek. You know, he really wanted to get his mentor back, his friend back. You know, and Krillin, who has a lifelong relationship with everyone else, wants to see it, their friends come back. But, you know, Piccolo, throughout the series, is a big motivator for Gohan, to the point where Gohan even basically says, hey, look, you know, I love my dad and all, but, you know, really, you're my master, and I would like to represent you, you know, in the end of the world. Uh-huh. And that's a nice little touching moment for Piccolo, because Piccolo really becomes a protector to Gohan, to, like a father figure to Gohan. And when Goku sort of serves Gohan up to Cell, to which I actually watched that over again not too long ago, Piccolo is the first one who's furious. Like, hey, he's not strong enough to do this. Why are you going to throw him in?
Well, and a line that really resonates with me personally is he says that he may have that power, but he's also a scared kid who doesn't know how to awaken it. Which is insight he has into Gohan's mind that Goku remarkably doesn't seem to have, which you would think a father would. So that like quote by Piccolo that, yes, he's a powerful Saiyan, but he's also a scared 11-year-old boy. That line kind of cements the thesis that Piccolo is more of a father to him, you know, just for understanding him.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? This turned into the Piccolo show.
Well, I mean, you know, I got a lot of love for Piccolo. Piccolo is one of my favorites.
Me too. And,
I think he's one of the most well-written characters. Absolutely. The only other exception I would say is Vegeta.
And Trunks.
I mean, Trunks is very well-written. I mean, at least a few Trunks. But my issue with, like,
other characters like Goku is Goku is it's hard to say that he really changes because when you think about it, he's
a static character for sure.
He's very static because it's the same thing. He's either eating, he's fighting somebody stronger than him because he wants to.
I feel like there's a sense about Goku and many other characters as well. I could think of some examples off the top of my head where they are consistently entertaining, right? They're static. Mm. They're static. They're not, they're not very literary. There's not much to dive into there, but they're consistently entertaining in the role that they play. And moreover, the role that they play, you know, can tend to invite and enhance conflict, you know, because Goku is ever present and always growing stronger and always looking for a good fight. These fantastic fights always occur. Most villains who appear in the series, or rather, most villains who appear in the series eventually quarrel with him, leading to a lot of our favorite scenes. And then in the Android Saga, the entire story arc is actually centered on villains coming back to get even with him. And even Cell, who shows up later, is just programmed with a fascination of fighting Goku. So Goku works. You know, he works for what he is. But if you're looking for dynamic characters, then you absolutely have to look at, you know, that's where Dragon Ball Z can throw some people off, I think, because a lot of characters don't change much. But there are characters who really do and develop. And my favorite to this day will always be Vegeta. And despite my aversion to much of the Buu saga, my favorite scene with Vegeta to this day will always be Trunks, you are my only son, but I haven't held you since you were a baby, have I? Like, that's the one scene for me. Like, I mean, I cannot stop myself from tearing up when he says that. Because I'm just like, holy hell, like, this is not the same guy at all.
No, and you slowly see that change after Frieza.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because without Frieza, you really don't have a changed Vegeta. Because it's really Frieza that humbles Vegeta.
Yes. And many villains in his employ as well. Technically, the very first villain that we see bullying Vegeta is Kui. And although Kui is quickly forgotten after he exits the narrative, his role while he's there is very important because that's the first time we see Vegeta on the defensive in a relatable position to the protagonists and the viewers. Like before we see Kui dissing him and bullying him and backing him up against the wall, you know, if somebody asks, you know, picture Vegeta from the Saiyan saga, you know, getting bullied or feeling helpless, you would like kind of have to struggle to think, oh, what would that look like? You know? So that character enters to provide us with that, you know, the beginning of Vegeta's new story arc. But as you say, he is ultimately employed by Frieza. So Frieza can certainly, you know, suck up all the credit for that.
Well, I mean, it's that idea that, you know, he's worked for Frieza all this time and he doesn't know. Yep. None of them know what Frieza really did. And so Vegeta really ticks Frieza off to the point where he's like, I don't care about you anymore. This is what really happened. And I'm going to laugh in your face after I beat the crap out of you. And, you know, it gets to a point where he realizes that, you know, he's been working with the murderer of his entire race. And, you know, he's been fearful of this guy because of his power level, but he's always worked with him because that was the status quo. Everybody worked for Frieza, and that was the end of it. He was just that person that had to put up with him. He didn't know that he was the person who was responsible for slaughtering everybody.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
And suddenly in that moment, he realized that, you know, the only people that have really stood up for him in recent memory would be, you know, Gohan, Krillin, and Goku.
My man, Krillin.
Who sort of come to his aid against Frieza.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is what people might not realize about Dragon Ball is that it may seem, you know, simple in some ways to other people. Like, it's just about a bunch of fights and, you know, the characters are silly and the characters don't change much. And it's very, you know, it might seem very two-dimensional to some people. But if you're big fans like you and I, and you've, you know, absorbed every line of every episode, I mean, there is actually some pretty, there's some good writing lessons in there. There's a fellow on YouTube who's based almost his entire YouTube channel on picking a character from Dragon Ball Z, his favorite show, and just explaining what part of the writing or character development process that they represent. For instance, you know, he did a whole segment on Vegeta as developing the anti-hero, and so on. Like, I mean, there's a lot you can actually extract. There's a reason so many people were so into it from such a young age.
Now, there's an arguable case there that Vegeta is the first real anti-hero that we see, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea, though, is there's a reason why, you know, Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z and, you know, sort of the legacy of that show has been around for over 30 years.
Absolutely.
You know, you're talking about what, Dragon Ball was 89?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well.
So, I mean, you know, obviously they did something right in that department. And, you know, it continues to be a springboard for my writing career. I started writing fan fictions and, you know, I take very much a lot of inspiration from that, you know, experience.
Well, and that sort of, you know, that kind of cycles back to the point I was trying to make earlier about Goku, like, you know, being such a, you know, simple but entertaining character. You know, what are the characteristics of Goku? He's pure of heart. He's nice and we like him. He's, you know, he's funny and he's totally gluttonous. You know, he eats crazy. He, you know, doesn't understand mathematics or, you know, common sayings. You know, he's constantly doing things to make us laugh. And he loves a good adventure and a good fight. So everywhere he goes, he's going to see something interesting and give us a good fighting sequence. And, you know, that kind of character you can easily publish, you know, volumes of books about, of manga books about, and produce various episodes about. And then, you know, that character also invites characters like who might, you know, tag along for a while and actually go through some serious development, since they don't have to drive the narrative the same way he does. You know, they can kind of have their own little story arc in how they react and respond to things. So, you know, I think there's definitely a formula there that just, you know, fundamentally sets up a long-lasting series. You know, the idea of travel, the idea of, you know, going out and jumping into this issue or that issue, you know, and I'm rambling, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a great time sort of talking about what's going on with Sanguinary Song and sort of One True Promotion. And, you know, a nice, you know, 30-minute talk about anime and, you know, with this, the importance of anime in the community. I definitely like being able to talk about, you know, this stuff. You know, I know you've been watching the Yu Yu Hakusho. I'm sure next time we'll probably talk a little bit about the Yu Yu Hakusho. Because I just watched Yu Yu Hakusho all the way through before I started Dragon Ball. And I definitely have some thoughts on that for sure. So when we come back, we'll come back next week. We'll talk about probably Yu Yu Hakusho and probably some more updates, because by then we're getting close to my end of 365-day challenge. So I might have some more announcements for you guys. So stay tuned, stick around. Another episode of Talk Is Best will be coming to you next week. I'm definitely going to make it happen. I know it's been every other episode as of late, but we're going to get back to the weekly schedule. So is there anything else you want to talk about real quick before we go, like mentioning where we can
add Alec Pangea author Instagram? That's where you can see all three of One True Promotion's other shows Tuesdays and Thursday nights.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good night, everybody. Talk Is Bast is sponsored by One True Promotion. If you like what you see, subscribe to Talk Is Bast through the Anchor app. And while you're there, check out our record a message function.
where you can actually record a message and get that broadcasted on the show.